So thanks, Anne and Roxanne and Greg again for organizing the symposium. It's been fantastic. And thanks to the seminar speakers as well. The talks have been great, and I'll just try and keep up the best as I can. And to do that, I thought maybe I should try to address the biggest question I can think of. And that is, what causes species diversity and generates the Darwin's tangled bank of life? And today I want to explore the idea that maybe one of the largest parts, or one of the great components of generating this diversity, is biodiversity itself. What do I mean by that? Well, what I mean is maybe it's possible that as new species form, they create new niches for other species to exploit, potentially catalyzing a chain reaction of speciation events across trophic levels. Now, this idea of cascading speciation or sequential radiation has been recently been argued by Worm Abrahamson and John Starman and colleagues to be particularly relevant for understanding the great diversity of plant-eating insects and their parasitoids. And so if we distill the question down, we're really asking whether sympatric host shifts, host plant shifts of a phytophagous insect can induce sequential race formation at higher parasitic or parasite trophic levels. And we're going to use as our test case today Ragulites pomonella, the apple maggot fly, and its braconid wasp parasite, Diachasma alloium. So Ragulites pomonella, the apple maggot, it's a model for sympatric speciation in our backyards. The recent shift of the fly within the last 150 years from its native plant hawthorns to apples is often cited as a case of incipient speciation in action, in progress. And what we want to explore today is if we look at some of its parasitic wasps, in particular I'm going to concentrate on Diachasma alloium, whether it too is forming a new sympatric host race on apple or on the apple infesting fly. So experiments and surveys by our lab and colleagues have shown that Diachasma alloium attacks several taxa, or several different Ragulites flies in what we call the Ragulites pomonella sibling species complex. So the apple and hawthorn races of the species Ragulites pomonella are part of a larger complex of sibling species, all of which are specialized on different host plants, and all of which resulted in Guy Bush in 1966 writing that the whole group, the whole sibling species complex, radiated by sympatric host shifts. And what we found is Diachasma alloium attacks four different taxa in the group. In addition to the apple and hawthorn host races, it also attacks Ragulites mendax, the blueberry maggot, and Ragulites zephyria, the snowberry maggot. So with that background, let's take a step back and lay some more foundation and ask the question, what actually generates reproductive isolation in the fly? What's causing it to form a sympatric race? And there are two major categories of host-associated adaptations that produce ecologically based reproductive isolation in the fly. One is that the fly mates host-specifically on or near the food of its host plant. So it sets up a system of assortative mating based on host choice. And the second aspect is host performance trade-offs. There are survivorship differences by living in different fruits. And for Ragulites pomonella, one of the primary long-distance cues that the flies use to recognize their plants and discriminate amongst plants is host choice based on fruit odors, or the volatile compounds coming off the surface of the fruits. And with respect to performance trade-offs, one of the biggest traits is related to diapause life history timing, because apples and hawthorns fruit at different times of the year. They're offset by about 3 to 4 weeks in their peak fruiting times. And so the fly, which is univoltine, has one generation a year, has to match its life history, and it closes at a time that matches when the fruit's available. And so the time of occlusion of the apple and hawthorn host races is offset by a couple of weeks to match fruit availability. And that's another factor that comes into play. So what we can ask is whether the wasp is doing the same thing. and whether the wasp was showing the same types of host-associated adaptation as the fly, and that could lead to ecological reproductive isolation and the beginnings of incipient speciation. So does it? So these are some data that were gathered by Lucas Stolinsky in a blueberry patch in Fenville, Michigan. And what it shows is that, in fact, male and female mating is initiated near the host fruit. In fact, the average distance that a mating occurred for these wasps is about a little more than 7 centimeters. And Lucas didn't observe a mating at a distance of more than 30 centimeters from the host fruit. So it appears that the wasps actually do use the host fruit as a rendezvous point for mating, eventually oviposition. So the wasps are free living now. They have a free living stage. And so this is critical. What are they doing to the free living stage? And they're using the fruit to rendezvous to find mates. So how are they finding the fruit? Are they using the same cues as the flies do? Are they using fruit volatiles as one cue to find the fruit? So to do this, we conducted what we call a Y-tube olfactometry test. Lucas actually invented this as well, or was a key to this assay. And we modified it. Andrew Forbes, my graduate student, and I modified this. And the basic premise is you put a naive fly in one end of the Y-tube. You shine a light source that induces wasp movement up the tube. And then you challenge it to make a decision to move in a direction, one direction or the other. In one of the arms of the tube, you shoot a blank airstream, and the other, you have an airstream with host fruit volatiles. And you see which arm of the Y tube it chooses. And as a control, you basically have arms of the tubes with just blank air sources to show that there's no hand in this, in these wasps and going one way or the other. And to cut to the chase, the answer is they do, in fact, use fruit follicle cues to discriminate amongst host fruits. So these are the percentage increase of wasps essentially moving to the arm of the tube with the fruit odor volatiles in it versus a blank. And what we see that all the wasps prefer or orient to their natal fruit odors. In addition, though, very interesting, is that when we challenge the wasps with their non-natal fruit odor from alternative hosts, they're deterred. They're antagonized. They actually show a degree of avoidance behavior to non-natal fruit odors. The flies do the same thing. They show the same behaviors. It has implications for reproductive isolation. I won't go into, maybe in the question and answer period, I can discuss them. But it's very interesting. They rapidly evolve to both prefer their new natal blends and avoid, in this case, what might be the ancestral fruit volatile odors. So what about other traits? What about diapause differences? Well, it turns out that the wasps also show the same differences in eclosion times, matching the fruiting times of the host plants that their fly resources use. Wasps from blueberries eclose earlier than wasps from apples, that eclose earlier than wasps from hawthorn. And this is the same order that these different plants fruit and that the larval fly resources are available out in the field. We've also found, in fact, that the average wasp lifespan in the lab, at least, is 13 days, which is actually about half of that of the flies. So this can result in an actually increased allochronic isolation for the wasp compared to the fly, up to 75%. So the wasps are doing, at least phenotypically, very similar to what the flies are doing. What about genetics? Is there any evidence for genetic differentiation between these wasp populations? For the flies, there is. There's 6 allozyme loci that we've scored between the flies in the past that show significant allele frequency differences between apple and hawthorn flies. Do the wasps also show significant allele frequency differences? So we looked at microsatellite loci. We scored 21 variable microsat loci for Diachasma alloium from several populations, 8 different populations across the Midwest, in Pennsylvania, New Jersey. We scored several sites that were sympatric. This is just to give you a general feel for the scale of sampling. And to cut to the chase, The answer is yes. We found 9 microsat loci that show consistent host differentiation. This is a neighbor joining tree, blueberry wasp clustered on one end of the network, hawthorn wasps at the other, and apple wasps in the middle. The snowberry wasp, that other wasp population, clustered near the end off of blueberry wasp. There's about 80-70% bootstrap support. So there is evidence for genetic differentiation between the wasp populations. And really interestingly, when we focus down on some of the loci, and this is locust 3, microsatellite locust 3, it shows a really pronounced differentiation between these populations. Blueberry wasps have high frequencies of these alleles at this locus, 196, 200, and 204, whereas if we look down there at the bottom here, hawthorn wasps hardly have these alleles at all. There's quite a bit of genetic differentiation between these wasp populations. I think it's almost safe to say races, at least now. If we look at locus 3 in more depth, the pattern even becomes more intriguing. So now I'm going to just look at one allele at locus 3, 196 allele. And what we found is that it's in reasonably high frequencies in the blueberry wasp and apple wasp populations. But look at this. In 385 individuals we've scored so far, we have yet to find this allele in that hawthorn wasp population. I'm going to return to this in a second, because this has significant implications for the origins of the apple wasp population. Get back to it. Before I do that, though, I want to ask another question. And that is, do the microsat loci show significant associations with wasp occlusion time? So we have a number of loci that are differentiated between the wasps. We know the wasps are differentiated with respect to occlusion time. Maybe some of these genetic markers are associated with those occlusion time differences. In fact, in the flies, when we look at apple and hawthorn flies, the 6 allozyme loci that show frequency differences between the apple and hawthorn fly races are actually associated with diapause. They correlate with diapause occlusion time. Are the wasps doing the same thing? It'd be almost too much to believe, but they are. It's true. There's really a highly significant, and these are R squared values we're talking about, not R. We're talking like 50, 60, 70% associations in some case between these microsat markers and occlusion time in the wasp populations. And it gets even more intriguing. In fact, when we look at locus 3, remember that's the locus that showed really pronounced differentiation between these populations? Well, if we look at it, this locus alone explains a significant amount of occlusion time variation in the blueberry wasps, moderate levels in the apple wasps, and nothing or hardly anything in the hawthorn wasps. But of course, these alleles aren't even present, barely present in the hawthorn wasp population, so we'd expect that, right? So if you look at it, actually there's an association between the occlusion time, the frequency of those alleles in the population, and the amount of variation it explains in the occlusion time. So in the blueberry wasp, it explains a lot of the variation. Apple wasps, a moderate amount. But within each of those wasp populations, if you look at this allele and its association with occlusion times, it's earlier. Within blueberry wasps, those individuals that have genotypes containing these 3 alleles occlude significantly earlier than the alternatives. So what does this mean? What's the take-home message here? Well, locus 3 seems to be a naturally segregating large effect QTL that's associated with diapause timing. It's genetically differentiating populations of those wasps that are ecologically, reproductively isolating the host races of the wasps via the effects on diapause. Also, let's return to that question now about the origins of this newly formed apple wasp race. Well, think about it. The lack of the 196 allele for locus 3 in hawthorn wasps makes it likely that the apple wasp is of recent blueberry origin, not hawthorn origin. We can't completely rule out the possibility that this apple wasp population is of hybrid origin, maybe a haw-blueberry cross in some ways. But it does suggest that it's not a simple one-to-one follow the leader story. There's a plot twist here involved. The shift of the fly to Apple opened up a new resource opportunity that a number of different members of that Parasitoid Guild jumped upon and utilized. It's not just simple one-to-one follow the leader coevolution story. So we have evidence now that diachasma host races exist. They formed in symmetry very quickly and ecologically isolated the same traits that ecologically isolate these Ragulibus pulmonella fly races and sibling species. So the question then is, diachasma an exception, or is this a common occurrence out in nature? Do we really have sequential trophic radiation, a cascade, or is it more like a trickle down and just occasionally occurring? Now, I don't know the answer to that question, but I could say that at least half of all animals are parasitic in the broad sense, that insects are the most diverse group of organisms on the earth, there's over a million described species, and 20% of insects are parasitic hymenopterans. So there's really a world of opportunity for sequential radiation. Thanks.
So, are you or Andrew or anybody trying to do the same thing in other parasitoids or in these?
Yes. The short answer is yes. The long answer is, we haven't gotten to it yet, but there is intriguing precursory data suggesting that some of the other members of the Parasite Guild are doing the same thing, at least behaviorally. We haven't analyzed those wasp populations genetically yet. Diachasma morpha might be doing the same thing. At least in the Y-tube test, it's also showing, it looks like it may be showing odor discrimination. Unfortunately, the question is the wasp mate in the lab, and Lucas, who's in the audience, is probably the best pro at trying to rear them in the lab after Andrew, and so far we haven't had success at oviposition in the lab. Yeah, so all of these sibling species and the plants they attack, or most of them, are sympatric in the eastern United States. So the blueberry range and deerberry, which are the primary host of Ragulibus mendax, overlap broadly with hawthorn throughout the eastern United States. So it's quite easy to envision how it happens. In several of our sites that I showed what we analyzed genetically, there's blueberries, apples, and hawthorns present in pretty close proximity.